Hey, it's Sandra and Chris.
Thanks so much for listening to Heart of the Enneagram. We hope this podcast is offering you insights as well as entry points for opening the heart.
We offer this podcast as a free resource for personal and spiritual growth. And in order to continue this work, we need your support.
So please visit our website, heartoftheenneagram.com, and click on the link to contribute.
Whatever you give will be gratefully received.
Welcome to Heart of the Enneagram. I'm Chris Copeland.
And I'm Sandra Smith.
And we invite you to take a courageous and loving look at what is.
My life is so much more enriched when I invite people into experiencing even the difficult parts with me.
So Sandra, welcome back to Winston-Salem.
Thank you, Chris. I'm glad to be here.
Yep, and today we're going to explore relationship dynamics between type 6 and type 8.
Two good friends.
Yes.
All right, let me introduce Anna Flagg, the 8, who's going to engage in this conversation. Anna is a mental health counselor in Winston-Salem and the pastor at Christ Community Church in Pufftown, North Carolina. She holds a master's degree in divinity and counseling and uses her training and education to help others heal, grow, and cultivate meaningful relationships. In addition to her work in the community, Anna is passionate about fostering healthy conversations about faith and sexuality, both inside and outside the church. She loves to spend time with family and friends, especially her two teenage children, who inspire her to be silly and laugh daily.
Indeed they do.
Welcome, Anna.
Thank you.
We also want to welcome Brian Hollingsworth, who leads with Type 6. Brian was born and raised in Raleigh, North Carolina. He's the middle child of three brothers, a fact which he credits for his interest in mediation, ministry, mental health counseling, fields which he's pursued through earning his Master of Divinity degree at Wake Forest University at School of Divinity, and soon his Master's in Counseling at UNC Greensboro. In addition to being a lifelong student, Brian enjoys participating in the arts through theater, painting, and music, and loves to spend as much time as he can outdoors. So welcome, Brian.
Thank you, Chris. Glad to be here.
So Brian and Anna have been friends for 4 years.
To take in this information fully, we invite you to access all three brains. It's wonderful that we have three. So let's take some deep breaths and get more fully in the body and feel our feet on the floor so that we may have a grounded presence. And in the heart space, let's open the heart and engage with a curious mind as we bring into our foreground the little 6 and the little 8 in us. So let's take a deep breath.
For type 8, the lead center of intelligence is the body, and body types are fairness oriented. The motivation for the 8 is to protect self and to protect others from vulnerability. And so the focus of attention, where their attention goes by habit, is power and control. Where is their power? Who has the control? The core fear for AIDS is being powerless, and they can be triggered by anything or anyone or any situation which may try to control them or something that's important to them. Some strengths for the relationships in type 8 are they have great leadership skills, they're decisive, they're direct, forthright, they have a wonderful intensity of life, they're very practical, and they desire to protect others. They can get stuff done with a focused attention, which is a great gift for 8s, and they really are great actually at sharing their vulnerability if they know the other has their back.
Type 6 is the center of the thinking or a head triad, where they know first with logic, reason, and analysis. This is the information-oriented triad. The focus of attention is on worst case, what might go wrong, potential harm, or emotional loss. They are motivated to keep things predictable and safe. And reactivity occurs when the core fear is tapped into, which is to be alone in a dangerous world. The strengths of this type include keen observation. You just can't get anything by a six. So they're highly observant. Logical thinkers, they're warm, friendly, approachable people. Curious minds, they ask good questions. They know how to connect the dots. And they're great troubleshooters. We like to think of six as the troubleshooters of the Enneagram. And they tend to be quite loyal to family and friends. These two types are the two in the Enneagram who trust the least, and oftentimes sixes and eights are known as lookalikes. They both tend toward underdog causes to protect the least of these, and both are other-oriented because of this lack of trust.
So, Brian and Anna, we'd love to hear from you about this type 6 and type 8 that you live in, and what works well for the two of you in your friendship?
So I think that what works well in our relationship is, at least from my experience, you know, I just have a deep sense of trust with Brian, that the best way for me to explain it is an example of something that happened between us. About a year and a half ago in our relationship, we were having a conversation about something, and I don't remember what the details were, but I was getting pretty worked up about something, pretty excited. And I started to kind of calm myself down, and Brian just looked at me, and he's like, "It's okay. I can handle it." And there was just this knowing, like, he said that to me, and I had already known that and experienced that with Brian. But him verbalizing that was just a deeper, like, he saw who I was. He saw that even though I was getting excited or upset about something, that I didn't have to calm myself down for his comfort level, that I could, like, let go whatever it was that was working me up. And he was just really present for me in that. And that has been a consistent experience for me in my friendship with Brian.
You know, eights, sometimes we'll talk about how people experience them as too much or too intense. And so having somebody who can say, "You can show up here and I'm going to be with you. However you need to show up, I'm going to be right here." That's an amazing way to have trust.
It is an amazing way. It feels like such a gift when that happens. I'm so used to hearing that from folks that I do a sort of... it's an ingrained unconscious monitoring of the room all the time. Did I just say too much? Did I just speak out of turn? Did I say something that offended you? Not because I intended to, but because I've learned to read those cues that other people give, because not everybody will tell me, maybe you crossed the line there or whatever it is. I just don't trust that they're going to give me that direct feedback to know. So I feel like I'm constantly monitoring. And with Brian, I just don't feel like I have to do that at all, really.
That's just one of the greatest gifts another can offer an eight, is to say, whatever, just don't tamp down. That's beautiful.
It's interesting as I'm listening to you, Anna, because so much of what you're describing, the taking in the room to kind of keeping your eyes and ears open to your surroundings, is very similar, you know, to the way I operate in the world. And so I'm thinking about our similarities as we talk and about what works well. And it's interesting to think about how similar we are, because our personalities, you know, I think if folks were to meet us, we're very different in the way we present and show up in the world. And yet we do have these similarities. This topic of trust that you brought up, it's interesting that to hear that the type 8 and type 6 have the most trouble with trust, because I would say the thing that works best and most well between Anna and I is the trust. I feel like from the beginning, our communication with one another has been very direct, very open, very supportive. I have trusted Anna from the moment I really met her for the first time, which is saying something for me because trust takes so long to build in a relationship. There's always been this feeling of safety, of trust, and of just presence with Anna because she is so... she can be so direct. She can be very present in the moment. And that is comforting for me. It is assuring for me. It just, when I'm with Anna, I just feel so comfortable. I am so in the moment.
Well, sixes are notorious for looking for hidden agendas, and eights usually don't have them.
I don't have to worry about a hidden agenda with Anna. Anna will tell me how she's doing. If I say, Anna, how are you? Mm-hmm. Anna's going to tell me, you know, this is how I'm doing.
I love how you said, you know, for two types who don't trust very easily, we trust each other. And I think a part of that is because there's a directness and a truth-telling in both of these types. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like every 6-8 couple that I know, friendship or intimate, they say, the other has my back.
Mm-hmm. I feel that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that.
I definitely feel that. Brian, one of the things that has allowed me to just continue to build that trust with him is that Brian has a way of making sure that his presence in my life is known even when we're not able to always be near each other and spend time together. It's just, you know, every once in a while, like a little text message, or when we were living close together, he would, you know, slip notes under my door, or just like little things that let me know that even though we didn't always get an opportunity to sit down and have that conversation and be face to face or in the same room, that I'm a part of his life and he's able to express that and communicate that in a way that's subtle at the same way that it's very direct and forthcoming with, like, hey, I see you even when I don't physically see you.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like loyalty to me.
It really is.
Well, and I was going to ask that question, actually, Brian. Like, you know, loyalty is a gift of those six. So how does that show up for you in this friendship?
Well, she's right. The example she's sharing of just kind of checking in or being present or feeling, I feel so comfortable with Anna. I really feel like I can joke around. I can let my guard down. I will, crack a joke here and there with her that I might not crack with someone else. And just like really very comfortable. And so it's, loyalty comes easy. You know, I've never thought about it in our friendship. I've never thought, is Anna, you know, deserving of my loyalty, or, you know, not that I think that too often in most relationships, but just it's never really crossed my mind. It's just been so easy to be in relationship and be in friendship with Anna. So I'm thinking as we're talking, I'm thinking about the first time I really met Anna for the first time. And it's interesting the way, you know, we're talking about how we see the world similarly. We show up perhaps a little bit differently, but we see things similarly. And the first time I met Anna, we were at a study session for an exam in divinity school. And I didn't know Anna very well then. And we were new. This was first semester of divinity school. And somehow we connected because neither one of us were on board with the way things were going in this study session. We both kind of made eye contact, and it was like, are you thinking the way I'm thinking? And we were both thinking the same way. And it's interesting to think about that now in relationship, you know, in the context of our type structures, because that initial bond was in kind of, okay, here's someone who gets it and sees it kind of the way I do, and we're going to connect over this. And that was really the beginning. So that's been coming through my mind as we're talking about the trust and the loyalty. And really, I'm thinking about what drew us together in the first place. And it was a study session where we both bonded over, we're going to do this a different way.
It wasn't going so well, huh?
Well, the study session wasn't going well, but what I find, so... Brian and I have shared this story between each other, you know, thinking about how our friendship started. And I had a feeling that it was going to come up during our conversation today, because I'm aware of how impactful that time was for Brian. And I've reflected on this a lot. And so the way I remember it is slightly different in that. So no, the study session was not going well. And we were on the same page about, like, I don't know what their plan is. I've got this other plan.
This is not how I study.
And what I notice about the difference between us is that for me, Brian was somebody that I had met in classes. We'd seen each other. We might have had some other small conversations. And yes, it was really the first significant kind of connection that we had. But for me, I was like, oh, there's Brian, and we had this conversation, and I went on about my business. And as I've thought about us in relationship, for me, I have a tendency to notice that my experience of the relationship grew over time, in that I try to just always show up as I am. And like, people, like, you either like that or you don't.
Right.
And it, you know, what I've noticed about my friendship with Brian is that Brian continued to show up too. And for me, over time, it's like, oh, yeah, we have some things that we connect with. That's cool. And the deeper part of it has happened as we were able to, you know, start sharing more personal things about ourselves, you know, share mm-hmm. those jokes that I'll say them in front of anybody, but Brian doesn't always say them in front of anybody. And to have that received on both sides. And so for me, you know, it's interesting that you ask him about loyalty. I didn't conceive of it in those terms, but really, as I look back over it, it's just that consistent, you're there, you're constant. I can expect something pretty regular from you. And that has been really impactful for me.
It's the same with me. I really feel the same. And I as I'm thinking about it and listening and reflecting on from the time we met and the development of our friendship over time, Anna's way of being so direct and present in the world, showing up as she is in the moment, has really invited and encouraged me to do the same. So while her experience of me has been always showing up, you know, present there in the moment, that's not always the case with me. And I can be a little absent-minded, and or, you know, my mind can be somewhere else. And yet there's something about Anna that draws me into the present moment. And I think that has grown over time. You know, we met at a time in my life when I was doing a lot of discernment and identity formation, and to find someone who is just so there and present in themselves was really invited me to do the same, and was a really powerful experience for me. And it has been throughout our relationship. So
have you experienced Anna as loyal?
Absolutely. Like, I know that Anna is there. If I need to call, text, if I need to drive to where she is and just hang out for a little bit, just to talk, like, Anna is one of the few people in my life that I know that no matter when, what, or how I need to show up, whether it's to receive advice or help or just talk something out, like, Anna is there and will shoot straight with me and tell me exactly, you know, how she feels, what she's thinking, you know, if I'm seeking that. So absolutely.
You both have articulated so beautifully the dynamic of how the giftedness of your friendship and the ways that has worked well. So what about ways that your type has tripped you up in this relationship?
For me, I don't know if it's feeling tripped up, but I have an awareness that it may not always be as easy for Brian to make a decision and move forward with something. Mm-hmm. And so when he's talking to me about whatever it is that's going on in his life, It's not true just with Brian. I experienced this in other areas of my life, but my impulse is to give advice, mm-hmm. or here's what I think you should do, or, you know, and I'm aware that some people want that, and other people may not want that. And my learning continues to be recognizing, oh, not everybody makes decisions the same way that I do. I happen to be very instinctual and like, no, I feel like if I were in that position, that's what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not the person in that position, so that might not be for me to say. And so to really be patient and understanding that, you know, Brian's working out whatever Brian's working out, and I feel like my value to him in that is just to be with him as he does that and only offer advice, so to speak, if it's asked for.
I do spend a lot of time in my head. It takes me a while to make decisions or to figure things out, and I often do just need to kind of talk it out for long lengths of time sometimes. And Anna, my experiences of her always has been, I know the advice is there when and if it is asked for and when I need it. But most often, it's just a listening ear. And Anna provides that so well for me, and has done that from the beginning, being very respectful of, you know, of the ways my mind is working and sometimes even spinning a little bit out of control. And yet she is this calm, you know, secure presence there to listen, to offer insight and feedback as I need it. And so absolutely, I've experienced that.
Just know that internally, sometimes there's a struggle going on inside.
Yeah,
it's
interesting to hear that, because right. You would not know. I would, of course, my mind is somewhere else, but I'm not always aware that this may be really difficult for Anna to hear right now. You know, it's probably driving her crazy.
Well, and I heard it wasn't necessarily that it's difficult for you to hear. Mm-hmm. What the challenge is for you to monitor mm-hmm. or to watch your response.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because I do, I feel that impulse to let me give my thoughts, feedback, suggestions, advice. And like, let me be here, let me be present. And so hearing it and receiving it, like you said, Chris, is not the struggle. It's the impulse to act on that.
It's the impulse to impact.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a trance for type 8, the need to make an impact.
Mm.
And, of course, you've already named the crucial impact is a grounded presence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. What about you, Brian? Thinks that as a 6 that may or have tripped you up? Been challenges for you in this relationship?
My mind is definitely always prone to wandering a little bit from the present moment. And so, again, on this topic of presence, that is also a challenge for me to sometimes be completely present in the moment. My mind, even when I'm not aware of it, will just, even for a couple of minutes or 30 seconds, you know, leave the moment, go somewhere else. A lot can happen in that 30 seconds. I'm thinking of a time Anna and I were at lunch or dinner at a local restaurant, and I tuned out. I was not aware that I tuned out. I'm looking off to the side. My mind went to a worst case scenario that was totally made up. It just crazy situation. And I look back across the table, and Anna's just looking at me. And she's kind of like, where'd you go there? And I told her, I was like, we're in a restaurant. And I told her all this crazy scenario that had just gone through my head. And she's like, interesting. You know, just but by her response, like inviting me back to the moment. Because at any, I'm not even aware of all the times that I do it. And yet, that's one of the gifts with Anna, is that I'm going to look back across the table and Anna's going to be looking at me square in the eye. Welcome back.
You know? Glad you're here.
I will go places, yes. And that's always a challenge for me.
Well, and part of that you name is that worst case scenario thinking. That's one way sixes do that. But of course, your mind is going all kinds of places.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And in that particular situation, it was a made up scenario, but I'm not even aware of it in the moment. And yet, with Anna, I'm more aware of it because there's that invitation. There's that friend across the table who is very in tune with what's going on with me.
And I just want to take a moment to just express to Brian, you know, what a gift that is for me that, you know, a lot of people, we space out, you know, we lose whatever. And I just, what an honor it is for me to know that Brian feels safe enough to say, I totally just spaced out there and I was going on about whatever, and that he could be honest about that and just say what it was and then come back to the moment with me. I experience that as a gift because a lot of people would not just be honest about it, right, about something that's really trivial that everybody does. And that's just so important to me. So,
well, and part of what you're naming too, I think is for eights, people who shoot straight, who kind of name it what it is, that actually is very comforting because then that allows you to trust them. And I hear you saying that about Brian.
Yes, very much.
What are some strategies or practices that each of you engage in this relationship as a way to kind of be aware of how your type structure patterns come up and help this relationship?
Well, my mind goes to that example of kind of sitting across one another at dinner and the, you know, looking back and making eye contact and kind of being invited back into the moment, sometimes in a joking way, sometimes in a, you know, like, I'm talking, you know, are you listening kind of way.
Brian, I'm wondering if when your mind goes, wherever it goes, whether worst case thinking or someplace else, or let's say you're overthinking a decision, you all talked about that a while ago, do you have anything that tells you a body cue or something that you're overthinking and to come back?
I've learned to check myself and ask, Brian, is this reality? The situation that you're thinking about,
right,
the conversation that you're having in your mind, is this actually real? And often the answer is no, I've made up a scenario, or I'm thinking ahead to a possible scenario that, and then I'm living into that in my mind. You know, I'm having that conversation. I'm thinking about, you know, my response to whatever the situation is. And absolutely, yes. I catch myself, I don't know if I'm the only one who has shower conversations in the morning, and not out loud, but I'll find myself, especially at that time of day, you know, spinning in my head about something, and just that question, is this reality? Has this happened? Is this likely to happen? You know, of course, I can always make an argument that yes, it's likely to happen, but asking that question is actually a strategy for me.
And part of it is, am I in the future or am I in the present?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Often I'm in the future. Sometimes I'm in the past, reliving or rethinking, you know, responses to something. But that question kind of drawing me back in.
What about you, Anna? Strategies, practices.
Something that I have to continually remind myself to do is ask for help. And not help in the sense of, you know, when we were in school, maybe I would like to think about out loud about something that I was writing or a project or something like that. But as our roles have changed in the world, you know, not being graduate students anymore in that same space, and not seeing each other every day, I have to remember that, like, gosh, if I'm feeling lonely, I need to reach out. I'm feeling overwhelmed with something that's going on in my life right now, you know, I need to reach out to my friend and ask for help. And, you know, when I've done that, Brian, you know, so graciously said earlier that he experiences me as a person who's consistently there for him. But the same is true. When I do reach out for help, Brian is consistently there. Like, this is what's going on with me. I'm just, you know, struggling right now. Mm-hmm. And it can be very tempting for me to withdraw and figure out my problem, the solution or the resolution to my problem on my own. It's important for me to remember that I need to reach out and ask for help rather than stay in my head and figure it all out on my own.
Anna, what's difficult about reaching out and asking for help?
Oh, I mean, the core of it is admitting to myself that I can't just do it all by myself.
Yeah, yeah.
My life is so much more enriched when I invite people into experiencing even the difficult parts with me.
Hmm. It's so interesting to listen to Anna respond to these questions, because again, I'm just struck by the similarities, you know, and how I, you know, I'm thinking, wow, that's kind of my response too, you know. Mm-hmm. And it just, like, I check in with myself, you know, is this present, is this now, is this reality, you know, checking that out with someone else. And Anna's a great person to do that with, you know, just as we've already mentioned, talking out, you know, the thoughts or the scenarios that maybe are going through my head is really important. And so having someone like Anna, and she does this so well and so generously, just to kind of draw me into and to point out what is real, what is present, what is now, what is most important, is something I always receive.
So Brian, you've named so beautifully all the ways that Anna does these things for you. How do you support Anna? What are ways in which you show up that support Anna? I'm trying to get you to think about yourself in this versus, mm-hmm. does it make sense?
Mm-hmm. So how do I show up for you?
Well, in what ways are you a good friend?
It's hard to talk about myself.
Yes.
It is really hard.
We've noticed this.
This is why I'm asking the question.
Do it.
Oh my gosh. That is so hard. You know, I mentioned earlier just kind of the ways that we joke around, and I think there are parts of myself that I share with Anna, and from a place of vulnerability, but also in a place of saying, you know, I'm showing up here for you and with you too. You know, she referenced the notes going underneath the door, and that was something that I didn't even really think about. But just over a period of weeks, when I passed by her door, I would slip little jokes, I would slip little notes, kind of just to say, I'm here, I'm thinking of you, I see you, you know, even when you're not here, you're on my mind. And that comes so naturally. And she's such a fun person to do that with. And so checking in, you know, showing up, maybe it's a text message, maybe it's a note underneath the door, and trying to give back also that kind of presence that she so generously offers me. So when Anna needs to talk or will call me or, you know, we're grabbing a meal together, to really be present and to listen, to not offer. I know that if Anna needs advice or wants my feedback or thoughts, she will ask. Mm-hmm. But I can show up and be there for her as a listening ear, to validate whatever the experience, whatever the thoughts or feelings are in that moment, just by being there. And I do my best to do that. And,
when you talk about sliding these little notes under her door, it makes me giggle inside. Mm-hmm. And I don't, Anna.
You should see the notes.
Well, I'm kind of getting a clue that he might help you laugh.
He does help
yeah.
me laugh.
Oh. His humor.
Absolutely. You know, Brian has, so I am an appreciator of the arts, and Brian and I consistently have this low-key debate going on about whether or not I'm an artist. But Brian really is an artist. And you are. And So in performance art particularly, you know, Brian will just move and dance and sing and get great facial expressions and things that just make me smile and make me laugh and remind me that I can, it's okay to be silly. I'm not always comfortable behaving in silly ways. And I'm conscious about surrounding myself with folks who can help me be
yes.
that way. Mm. And Brian is definitely one of those people.
Sixes have that little, I don't know what it is,
there's a mischievousness.
There's an impishness.
My mom would agree with that.
Yeah. But spontaneous and mm-hmm. silly, and, you know, it's just so beautiful because you find some kind of different, innovative way for a laugh to come.
But I'll say with that, and I agree. I've noticed that tendency and kind of in myself, whether it's the humor, even a little bit of kind of the mischief. But it doesn't show up with everyone and in every situation. There are people in my life who don't see the humorous side, who don't see the lighthearted joke side, which I really feel is the core part of who I am. I feel like at my core, you know, I'm pretty
like,
lighthearted.
You're literally
guy.
One of the funniest
yeah.
people that I
yes.
know.
I have a pretty quick wit, you know, but because I spend so much time in my head, there's such a strong filter there that's not coming out. And yet I'm with someone like Anna who, whose filter operates differently. I was going to say she doesn't have a filter, but I don't want to go that far.
No.
But it's so easy. Like, she's one of the only people that I would, you know, slide those jokes under the door or show up in that way. And that's, you know, in a way, it's reserved for the most intimate and close friendships and relationships mm-hmm. in my life. I think my
yeah.
family would tell you I'm a pretty funny person.
Yeah.
You know, the facial expressions, the jokes and the wit. And it means a lot to me, Anna, that you see that and receive that because it's for me, it's intimacy and it's mm-hmm. trust mm-hmm. and it's I'm going to show you who I really am. And this serious person or this person who's stuck in their head all the time, maybe how a lot of people take me or perceive mm-hmm. me. And yet it feels like a gift I can offer. And I'm not even doing it consciously, but it's just so easy with someone like Anna. And it has shown up in so many fun ways in our relationship.
The gift of you, which is the most valuable precious thing.
Yes.
Thank you.
It's when you're living in your fullest self, in that trusting place, and you just show up freely.
It's just so fascinating to me that the 6-8 friendship, knowing that you both see the world, you have a similar worldview, which is the world is dangerous. The world can't be trusted. And so given that you both have that worldview, you're really looking for someone you can trust. And so it makes sense that you would find each other and speak directly and kind of relax in the company of the other and be yourselves.
It's so easy.
It's a refuge.
I've never had to really think about it, and it just comes so easy. So.
Well, given all of these great qualities and who each of you is, how would you each say that, could you name one thing that you could do to help this friendship flourish even more? Something that would allow you to grow that you would contribute to the friendship to help it flourish?
Well, it feels so selfish to say it because I feel like it's really for me. And I'm aware with how my life works that it would take effort on my part for this to happen. But particularly now that Brian has moved closer, just having that intentional time, whether it's FaceTime or meeting, you know, getting together.
And what's your work in that? How might you help make that happen?
My work in that is making sure that the time is there.
Okay.
and initiating that and saying, hey, I miss you, and I want to schedule some time.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have a responsibility in that, too. Especially now where Anna and I are in different places, personally and professionally, you know, we're not, we are, you know, a little closer together. We live closer together now than we did recently. But the intentionality, you know, especially when I can get so caught up in all the busyness of things. I'm going back to grad school, you know, again, and all the new relationships, all the new kind of patterns in my life, kind of getting caught up in that, it really will require for me that intentionality to check in and to say, hey, we live closer now, and this needs to be a thing. We need to
see. We should do art projects
this
together.
Yeah. And we those are the kind of things
great
we would
idea.
Do,
right.
You know, when we're classmates, and it just kind of came easy. I think the work now and is to be very intentional and consistent about that. My work is to check in and go back to those grounding relationships and friendships, like my friendship with Anna, to say, hey, let's catch up. Let's check in, you know, with one another. Let's just be. Let's mm-hmm. do some art together, mm-hmm. you know. And Anna is an artist, and it brings that part out of me as well. And so, doing those kind of activities, or you know, is important.
Mm-hmm. Well, anything else either of you would like to add, given your type 8 and type 6, that would help others kind of understand themselves and other friends better?
Mm. Mm.
Give them some insight.
You know, I think if you were to look on paper at the type 8 and the type 6, the similarities might not jump off the page at you the way they have in this conversation and the way we've been presenting them today. And I think if I did not know Anna, or if you were to describe someone like Anna to me, I wouldn't necessarily think that's going to be someone that I'm going to have a close, intimate friendship mm-hmm. with. Because it sounds like, you know, it's too much, or that's too direct, or that's too, you know, unfiltered even, you mm-hmm. know. And so the cautious part of me, the skeptical mm-hmm. part of me is going to, you know, would say, okay, well, let's check it out and let's see. Mm-hmm. And so I would just say that the similarities are there. And, you know, a part of my work as a type 6 and the way I show up in the world is to be more trusting and present in my relationships. And so Anna has certainly invited me to that just by being who she is. It's so important for both of us in both the giving and the receiving to just show up, to be present with one another, to be real. And the similarities come out, the mutual just love and affection is there. And so
thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I would say that you know, the old adage that patience is a virtue. living in my type, I the more experience that I have the honor to have in this life is just teaches me that when I can be patient and just slow down a little bit and not act on every impulse that I have, I allow space for other people to really show up, which is what I so desperately want, is for other people to show up. And sometimes in my desire for other people to show up, I can crowd out the space. And so to kind of just hold back just a little bit, and, you know, I get beautiful people like Brian in my life who come in to step in and say, look, I'm right here with you. And here are all the ways that we can be creative and wonderful and silly and loving and present together.
Mm. Patience or waiting is always difficult mm-hmm. for this mm-hmm. type. But if we can see it as active. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's really power in the pause.
There is power in the pause.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We lose control when we don't wait, actually.
Mm-hmm. Which is a great irony for the eight, right?
The type that most wants control is the least in control when we can't wait. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you. Well, it's been a wonderful treat to have you both here. Thank you for sharing of your stories and your experience and your friendship with us today.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
It's been wonderful.
Yeah. I want to end by reading these words from David White. A friend knows our difficulties and shadows and remains in sight, a companion to our vulnerabilities more than our triumphs. When we are under this strange illusion, we do not need them. An undercurrent of real friendship is a blessing exactly because its elemental form is rediscovered again and again through understanding and mercy.
With heartfelt gratitude, I'm Sandra.
And I'm Chris.
And we invite you to continue to look courageously and lovingly at what is.
We want to thank all who've made this podcast a reality, including Wake Forest University School of Divinity, for their financial and institutional support. For Sally Ann Morris, who composed our theme music, and for Toby Becker, who provided graphic design.
Thanks to Eric Merle for his editing expertise, to Tom and Lynn Berner, who provided recording space, and to the Narrative Enneagram and our mentors, Helen Palmer and Dr. David Daniels, its founders. And special thanks to all of our guests.
We offer this podcast as a free resource for personal and spiritual growth. And in order to continue this work, we need your support. Please visit our website, heartoftheenneagram.com, to make a contribution and to purchase our companion book.
In the days that lie ahead, may your mind be curious, your heart courageous, and your presence compassionate.